have mentioned at the beginning of the last argument that Judge Sparks will be participating in the record. That is true both in the last case and on this case. He is fully engaged, fully involved, will be listening to these arguments, and will be participating in conference. So I just want to make that clear. Our next case is United States versus Stratman. Major Merck, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, sir.
And Captain Wright, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, sir.
Very well, please proceed.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Major Jarrett Merck, and along with Ms. Megan Marino, we represent the appellant, Master Sergeant Jeremy Stratman. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, if I may, Your Honor.
Granted.
Counsel, please speak up.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
This court should find that recklessness is the requisite mens rea for the Article 134 offense of child endangerment for at least two reasons. First,
it may be helpful if you just move that microphone down a little.
Down?
Yes. That's it.
First, recklessness is not inconsistent with the mens rea definition approved by this court in Vaughn. Second, there is no military custom or ancient usage that necessitates a lower level of mental culpability than recklessness for the offense of child endangerment. Putting the labels aside and looking at the definitions of mens rea used in the Vaughn case, the definition is akin to recklessness. In Vaughn, the mens rea was defined as a negligent act or failure to act accompanied by a gross, reckless, wanton, or deliberate disregard for the foreseeable consequences. The definition patterns the definition for recklessness that's found in the MCM and the military judge's bench book that was in use at the time. If you, the MCM defined recklessness as a culpable...
Excuse me, Major Burke, I don't want to interrupt you, but I see the clock not moving. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The military judge's bench book further illuminates what that the culpability that was at play in that definition, and the bench book definition defined recklessness as a negligent act or failure to act combined with a gross or deliberate disregard for the foreseeable results. That grossness is equated, it is recklessness. And it's that grossness that was at issue that the military judge in Vaughn stressed was what was so offensive.
May I start kind of with first principles? Is it necessarily the case where Alonis and Haverty and Caldwell are even implicated here? So in those cases, what we had was a statute that was absolutely devoid of any mention of mens rea. Here, the president purports to have provided a mens rea, culpable negligence. Doesn't this court, before we engage in any Alonis analysis, need to determine whether the president lawfully exercised that, that this was appropriate, that it passes muster, and if so, we have a statute that has a mens rea, and we never touch Alonis or Haverty or Caldwell?
Your Honor, the president cannot legislate substantive criminal law. There's no argument that the president can enumerate or suggest ways in which Article 134 can be violated. That's an interpretive function. He or she is interpreting how Article 134 can be violated and the elements that would go along with that. But that has to be done within the construct of what Congress has laid out in Article 134. And Article 134 is silent as to the mens rea, and this court recognized that in Tucker. But that silence is a mandate to read into the statute the lowest level of mens rea necessary to separate lawful from unlawful conduct.
So let's separate that into two separate
arguments,
because both of them have significant substance to them. Now, I understand your point about the president not making substantive law, but typically what we're looking at is whether when the president acts, that we've got a situation where he is contradicting the plain language of the statute, and whether he is limiting the scope. So, number one, is it your position that because Congress did not provide a mens rea, by the fact that the president did, that he's contradicting that language?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Second thing is, I understand your point. You're looking at Ilonis and you're saying needs to be something higher than culpable negligence. We'll talk about that in a minute. But can't it also be viewed as some Article 134 offenses, you can have simple negligence be the mens rea? So by the president saying culpable negligence is necessary here, that the president has limited the reach of the congressional statute. Therefore, both of those prongs of the test are met, and this court then decides whether to grant deference to the president's determination.
Article 134 is a flexible statute. So that flexibility that Congress has given, it's a flexible framework, and by Congress not defining a mens rea and leaving it silent, but mandating that the mens rea that be read in is the minimum necessary to separate wrongful from innocent conduct, that gives the flexibility. So now the president can't legislate substantive criminal law, and mens rea is a substantive element. So in an interpretive function, when the president is enumerating or suggesting ways in which Article 134 can be violated, that when he can enumerate child endangerment, but when looking at that, when enumerating the mens rea for that, the guidance from Congress, the construct that he must work within, is set forth in Ilonis, Tucker, Haverty, as this court has recognized.
Okay, but counsel, what is this court then to make of the congressional acquiescence that this standard was articulated, and from 2003 in the first case to 2016 when Congress actually acted, Congress did nothing. And then when they did establish a standard, it's the standard that had been historically articulated.
Well, the 119B standard, if I understand your question, Your Honor, correctly, the 119B standard, that definition is not the same that is at issue here in the 2016 statute.
Yes, it's missing that last clause, but you started off with drawing the distinction. You said, setting aside the labels, but the fact is that Congress, in fact, acquiesced to that label, and then when they did enact the statute, they used that same label. Now, granted, we'll get into, I think, the definitional difference in chopping off that back end of the clause. But what are we to make of that? The fact that for, 13 years, Congress was fine with culpable negligence as defined in case law and then enumerated.
Well, I think the fact that it wasn't ever brought to the attention of this court before and Congress didn't act doesn't make it right if the president acted outside his or her authority when enumerating or setting the mens rea at a lower level than recklessness.
Doesn't that then go back to the Chief's question about if there's a spectrum, there's a range, and that you said 134 is flexible, and we have a lower range of that there are some offenses that mere negligence or simple negligence suffice. Culpable negligence is a higher standard, and then we have even higher standards. So I want to understand your argument with regards to how it is that you think that the president did not act consistent with the authority that had been delegated to him by Congress, and Congress's lack of reaction to that.
To your first point, Your Honor, the president acted outside his authority, the congressional mandate, because if you employ the Ilonis framework, and as implemented by Tucker and Haverty by this court, if you look at that, recklessness is the appropriate mens rea. That is the appropriate, that's the minimum mens rea necessary to separate innocent from criminal conduct. A parent who had a genuine belief that their actions were not going to cause harm would not be criminalized, whereas a parent who acted recklessly and disregarded known risks would be. And that level of mens rea is consistent with what this court has held in Gifford and Haverty, and when it says that that wrongdoing must be conscious to be criminal, and that the level of recklessness is deemed to be consistent with moral culpability. And so, and that also it was noted in Alanis, and this court in Gifford noted that, like, even the model penal code suggests that in situations where there's silence, recklessness is the starting point, if not knowing or purposeful.
But that goes back to the Chief's original question with regards to Alanis and Haverty. We don't have a situation of silence here once we got to the enumeration. I mean, I think the original question was that Article 134 itself is silent to it, but as to the mens rea, but then you would go back and you look at the enumerations and see that that's where we find the mens rea.
Your Honor, that's a bit circular to argue that that what the President can enumerate that and we would just look at that and determine whether it's appropriate for the mens rea, because that's giving the President authority to legislate. And that has been rejected by this court in Jones, and also even the Supreme Court, the case cited by the government, the J.W. Hampton Jr. case. It's a breach of national fundamental law if Congress gives up the legislative power and transfers it to the President. And just simply by saying, well, he can enumerate a substantive element to impose criminal liability, and we just look at that, there's no other check or balance or looking at it. He doesn't have to work through any type of framework, gives him just carte blanche legislative power, and he does not have that.
All right, counsel, let me see if I can make the question more specific. So under Article 134, silent. So when he's enumerating offenses, the President has some discretion. We can have negligent discharge of a firearm. That's fine, right?
Yes.
But your argument is that for child endangerment, he cannot have a negligent standard or a slightly higher standard, which is foreseeable but not probable. I don't know what to call that, to be honest. That your argument is it must be reckless. So explain to the court what law why isn't the President able to set a lower standard of mens rea in this specific instance for child endangerment?
The President, Your Honor, can set the standard to whatever the Alanis framework would dictate. If that framework would dictate a lower standard, so for example, in Kick, if you employed the Alanis framework and looked at it through the lens of Tucker, you see that military custom, ancient usage, mm-hmm. There's a special military need that dictates a lower mens rea than recklessness. But in Haverty, that didn't work. That didn't have an ancient usage, didn't have a custom. The same is true here, that for child endangerment, there is no ancient usage, there is no precedent, there is no custom of the service that necessitates a lower level of mental culpability than recklessness. And so the President can set a mens rea that's different from one enumerated offense to the other, but must do so while employing the same interpretive. He has to toe that line between interpretation and amendment, just as the court has to do when enumerating those offenses and elements. And that's all that this case is arguing. So it is a flexible standard that can, it doesn't disrupt other enumerated offenses and doesn't disrupt the ability for the President to set different mens rea. It just must do so within the framework that Congress has set out in Article 134 and cannot, again, go beyond that because it's an interpretive function, not a legislative function, so it can't go from interpretive to legislative. He must do so within the framework of Alanis and Tucker.
Counsel, I'm having a little trouble understanding why we would limit the president on the mens rea, but not necessarily on all the other elements of the offenses that the president enumerates. I mean, child endangerment involves a number of different elements, and you're saying, well, but you're restricted on the mens rea. Is he also restricted on the other elements?
Well, Your Honor, yes, to some degree, because if Congress has, it's as if in cases where under Article 134, it encroached on a punitive article set by Congress and just changing one element, there's rules of construction.
But just specifically on the issue of whether there's a tradition or a military custom, what if it's something new, like, yesterday we had broadcasting, I'm not trying to suggest this has anything to do with yesterday's case, but broadcasting intimate images without the consent of the victim. There's no military custom. There's no tradition. The president just says, oh, that's a new wrong. Here are the elements. And you're saying, well, all those other elements you can promulgate, but just not the mens rea. Well, you're limited on the mens rea.
Not limited, Your Honor, not limited, but has to interpret mens rea through what Congress has said is the framework and what the courts have said is the framework, because it cannot overstep his bounds from the interpretive function to the legislative function. In some ways be equally applicable to other elements, but specifically in the context of this case, the element of mens rea is at issue, but the principle that the president does not have legislative powers remains true. I mean, is a universal through those.
So he doesn't have legislative powers, but he has to follow judicial function in terms of he has to undergo this aloneness analysis to determine, as the chief executive, what the appropriate mens rea would be.
Well, he has to undergo an interpretive function to make sure that he's not, I mean, and...
So the Congress has not stated what the mens rea is. A part of what aloneness was all about, I believe, is trying to make it clear that a court's function is very limited. Courts shouldn't be getting into this issue of imposing elements, determining mens rea. We're very careful about that, and it's only when a statute is devoid that we hesitatingly get involved. Why is the president in the same shoes in the military justice system as this court? Why doesn't the president have the ability to look at it, say, you know, with this statute, Congress hasn't stated mens rea. He comes up with culpable negligence. What he's done does not contradict what Congress has said. It limits the reach of it because it could have been simple negligence, and therefore what the president has done is appropriate.
Your Honor, because that would give the president power to legislate. And as this court held in or analyzed in the Jones case, that the president can interpret, can suggest ways through Article 134, through enumerating crimes in Article 134, ways that is violated. But that's an interpretive function. The president cannot just substantively make criminal law that would in no way, for example, that has that would go outside the scope of Article 134's bounds. So if there were something that had no military nexus and no terminal, no relation to the terminal elements, the president...
I see your time has expired. Questions?
Just one, Chief.
Please.
And it's along that same line or the same line we've been asking, that to the extent you're saying the president has limited power to interpret, to the extent that when the article or when it was enumerated, it specifically cited to Vaughan and purportedly incorporated the definition that was used in Vaughan, how then did the president exceed, based upon your argument, exceed that interpretive authority that he has? I mean, because we now have case law that he is incorporating in now the enumerated article.
Your Honor, I see my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honor. The President did not import the same definition that was used in Vaughan.
Okay.
That language, that extra clause, that expands the threshold of liability and it makes it a much lower standard.
I got it, yeah. I just wanted to make sure you were that was how you were connecting them. Thank you.
But I have a question based on that. To
That's
what
fine.
Extent in Vaughan did this court say this is culpable negligence as compared to simply providing a rundown of what the military judge said, the back and forth? The military judge clearly gave an instruction of culpable negligence that is not universally recognized as culpable negligence. But did this court say that is the standard as compared to simply quoting the court, the trial court, and then saying culpable negligence is sufficient?
Your Honor, the issue wasn't squarely before the court, so the holding of that, no, is not that. But in Vaughan, this court did say that the elements and what the judge described catch with the essence of child neglect, which is analogous to the child endangerment that's at issue here. But it is, that is different than in both elements and definitions than the child endangerment, what was enunciated in Vaughan versus what the President ultimately did in the 2016 statute. They are different. The court did cite that is the essence. So it cited with approval that it didn't disagree with that definition and didn't correct it at that time.
Did that generate any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Major Merck.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Captain Wright.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Jocelyn Wright, and along with my co-counsel, Colonel Matthew Talcott, we represent the United States. This court should affirm the Air Force Court's decision for two reasons. First, as Commander-in-Chief under Article 36 and as head of the executive branch, the President implements statutory schemes. Thus, he can enumerate mens rea for Article 134 violations. And two, according to 30 years of military regulation, 21 states, 20 years of military precedent, and 16 years as a presidentially enumerated offense, culpable negligence is the appropriate mens rea for child endangerment.
So could the President theoretically have said the appropriate mens rea is simple negligence or even strict liability?
Potentially, Your Honor. For any offense that the President deems appropriate under Article 134, he would evaluate what the appropriate mens rea would be. In this specific situation, he looked at the military custom, regulation, precedent, this history that the military had of culpable negligence, and determined that was appropriate.
So is it simply a situation if Congress is silent on the point, the President has carte blanche?
Essentially, yes, Your Honor.
And what about this court's role? What about the idea of being able to separate wrongful conduct from innocent actions? Are we mandated to grant deference to the President on that point?
The court's is reluctant to read in mens rea and does typically provide deference to the President. If this court determined...
So what you're saying is it's not mandated that we grant deference?
Correct, Your Honor.
What criteria should we use to determine whether we should grant deference to the President's determination about what the appropriate mens rea is in a statute where Congress is silent?
Though the President could, in theory, carte blanche provide mens rea, he's still looking at the point where innocent conduct becomes criminal conduct. That is something that is practical in the common law as well as in military jurisprudence. That is where conduct becomes criminal. And so this court would be the check on the commander-in-chief as a military authority, the check there to ensure that he's not overstepping. Now, when
is that the standard that we're using? We're saying if the standard supplied by the president does not separate innocent conduct from criminal misconduct, then no deference. If it fails to do that, but if there is, this court should grant deference.
Yes, Your Honor. Due to the fact that we do not want to be criminalizing innocent conduct, and the jurisprudence of this court and the Supreme Court reiterate that.
Are there any other concerns this court should have in terms of fair notice or anything like that? Or is that the sole criterion that we should use?
The president, in enumerating offenses, under Article 134, provides notice and provides the point or what needs to be proven to put personal liberty in jeopardy. So that is also a consideration. We have to ensure that the president's enumerated offense is clear. What is a crime in this situation? And the president could create an offense that is not historically present. So, for example, the broadcast type offense, new technology may provide a need for a new enumerated offense under Article 134. There may not be that historical context for that enumeration, but...
Is the default rule from Alanis not that the starting point for separating criminality from innocent conduct is recklessness, and that if you want to move from that, there has to be some justification for doing so? Is that not what the Supreme Court suggested in Alanis, and then we repeat it in Gifford?
That is not the standard, Your Honor. Recklessness is not the default mens rea, and no court has said it is the default mens rea for all offenses silent on mens rea, for all statutes silent on mens rea. Essentially, culpability is a spectrum, beginning with innocent conduct and moving up to intentional conduct. And as the president or the courts move up that spectrum, it only becomes the appropriate level of culpability once innocent conduct is no longer being criminalized. And we have fully gone into where we have fully gone to the point where it's just criminal conduct under that mens rea. In theory, you could start with strict liability. There's strict liability offenses in federal case law, and specifically within military case law, we have some strict liability with regard to the age of a child in sex offenses. It's rare, but it occurs. So there could be a situation where that's appropriate. There could also be a situation where reckless conduct is not a high enough level of culpability and knowing is required. So it's dependent on looking at that spectrum of culpability and moving to the point that is appropriate.
And I guess I have the same confusion that the Chief does. And so then on our review of that, is that just a straight de novo? Like, what test do we apply to figure out whether the mens rea specified by the president is sufficient to separate criminal behavior from innocent behavior? Is that just a straightforward de novo? Well, we're convinced, we're not convinced. You get up and you make arguments about custom and usage and history and other state statutes, and we just weigh that de novo, and then we just sort of decide?
I think under Zachary, this court has said we first look to the statute and then we look to the manual, which is created by the president. So I think as the commander-in-chief, he receives some deference as having given orders to the military justice system, the commanders, the prosecutors, to ensure that the conduct is appropriately prosecuted. That receives deference. I don't know that it would quite rise to the level of abusive discretion for the president, but the government would prefer that to be the standard, where we're giving deference much like a judge, giving the judge deference unless there is something unlawful about what the president has done, that would require this court to determine it was erroneous.
So is it three steps or one step then? Do we have to look at it in terms of didn't contradict the plain language, narrowed the scope, and separated innocent conduct from criminal misconduct?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that three-step process is appropriate. Here,
and there's, from the government's view, there is no other consideration this court should properly take into account in determining whether the president's action was appropriate, that it passes, that this court should grant deference to it.
I believe I'm understanding your question correctly. I believe that the court should grant deference because the court is reluctant, rightfully reluctant, to read in mens rea and to essentially legislate. At a certain point, when reading in mens rea, you move from interpretation as a court into amendment, and that is problematic. The president is specifically situated as the head of the executive branch to implement Congress's statutory schemes, and when necessary, create or provide elements, definitions, enumerations to ensure that they're constitutional and also properly narrowed so that criminal conduct is being punished, but innocent conduct is not.
Are there any analogs in the civilian world to the setup we have here with the president and congressional legislation and so forth?
I cannot think of an analog situation, but because the president is dual-hatted as the chief of the executive and commander-in-chief, and our entire military system falls under the executive branch, this is a unique situation for this court to determine. But the president...
And is it unique, too, in terms of Article 134 and the scope of it?
Yes, Your Honor. Article 134 has been in existence in some form or fashion in this country since 1776, when it was the Articles of War. And throughout time, the president has enumerated offenses to ensure that there's proper notice and proper due process, and the statute itself is not vague or overbroad, as in Parker v. Levy. The court should first look to the text of the statute and ensure that, okay, if it is silent, we then move to the manual and we look to see what the president has said by executive order. This court has been willing to defer to commanders as well as the Army Secretary in Haverty and Gifford to see if those regulations provided a mens rea before stepping in to read in a mens rea. The president outranks both a commander as well as the Army Secretary and should receive that same type of deference, where you look to see if he's enumerated a mens rea first before reading it in yourselves.
Counsel, can I ask on that test, I think Chief Judge Olson previously asked, well, could the president have reduced for child endangerment the mens rea to negligence? And I think your answer was yes. Is that correct?
Yes, in theory, Your Honor, he could have lowered it.
Well, could he go through the entire list of enumerations for Article 134 specifications for every single one and make all of them negligence?
I think we would have a problem, Your Honor, with some of those offenses where innocent conduct would be criminalized if we did that in every scenario.
And wouldn't we just be looking to what Tucker said with custom and tradition and military necessity and so forth in determining which ones? I mean, I think that's all appellant is asking us to do in this case.
We should look at those and consider them, but it's not the be-all, end-all. Because we will have future offenses that, due to changes in technology, due to changes in the landscape of the military, where something has come up that we don't have a history for. And I think in that scenario, the analysis is, okay, was it contradicted, or is he contradicting Congress, yes or no, and then is he narrowing it, and then is it separating innocent conduct from culpable conduct? But I don't think this court should limit the president and say there has to be some tie to military usage or a custom of some kind because of those potential future offenses that could exist out here. Now, in this case, we do have military custom usage precedent that all state culpable negligence is the appropriate mens rea for child endangerment.
Now, we've got to get careful about labels here, right? Because we've got a slightly different definition of culpable negligence from the president than we usually see from other sources. I understand the president called it culpable negligence, but it doesn't look like culpable negligence to me. It looks like something less than culpable negligence. So if it's one thing for you to say, like, well, everybody uses culpable negligence, but what everybody uses is a different definition. So why is the president's slightly lesser definition okay if everybody else is using a higher definition, regardless of the fact that they all call it culpable negligence?
Understood, Your Honor. There are states that use negligence, culpable negligence, and criminal negligence. Culpable and criminal negligence tend to be the same, but there are some states that use just negligence as their standard. The definition that was provided in the 2016 Manual for Courts Martial tracks with the manslaughter definition of culpable negligence. And without further insight on why that was chosen, we can assume that there's a presumption of consistency within the manual. The definition for culpable negligence for manslaughter existed before child endangerment was used, and it appears that the president looked to that definition to make it more to ensure consistency within the manual, used that definition.
I mean, because the appellant argues that, somebody at DOD noticed that the definition of culpable negligence is not right, and they fixed it. Therefore, shouldn't we read into that that somebody came to their senses and realized, we have a bad definition of culpable negligence?
No, Your Honor. The MDRG and the executive order are silent as to the reasons why this amendment was made, as well as from the 2016 manual to the 2019 when it became its own article. There's no explanation as to why, but that additional clause, that even though clause, still exists within manslaughter. So it's not necessarily that it's because it's unlawful. Otherwise, they would have changed that definition as well. And the definition between the one provided by the military judge in Vaughn and that of the 2016 manual are similar with the exception, substantively similar with the exception of the last clause. Essentially, the president took gross, reckless, wanton, or deliberate and used one word for four, making it culpable disregard. Then when comparing the definition of culpable negligence with recklessness, we see that essentially the language is the same. It's a culpable disregard. What's different about the two is the result. So in culpable negligence, it's a possibility of harm. In recklessness, it's imminent or actual harm that's required. The harm is what differentiates culpable negligence from recklessness. And for children, it's necessary to protect them more than adults. We see this throughout state statutes. We have it in the Family Advocacy Program DOD regulation that started the concept of child neglect. And we want to ensure that children are protected when, say, a three-year-old is left at home. That is extremely problematic, as opposed to leaving an 18-year-old at home alone. We need to protect the children as part of our fighting force, the dependents that are part of our military system.
Now, is that what you just articulated? Where's that coming from? I think it seems to me like you just came up with that justification, but the government's relying a lot on the silence of various statutes and other sources as being evidence that the government can do what it wants. That justification for why the standard might be lower for child endangerment, that doesn't appear anywhere, right? That's something the government's now offering to justify why the mens rea requirement might have been slightly lower for a while.
No, Your Honor. It's coming from the DOD regulation that was instituted in 1992, creating the Family Advocacy Program. They saw the need to protect dependents and created a regulation to ensure that. And then in Vaughan, they reiterated, though it was the notice question in Vaughan, that regulation put the appellant in that case on notice that leaving her child alone while she went approximately 90 minutes away for several hours was inappropriate conduct. That demonstrated the history that the military has of protecting dependents. And in Vaughan, this court discussed the fact that child neglect was necessary to protect military dependents. They did specify it's for, you know, those individuals who are abroad where there might not be child endangerment statutes in place, but it could apply in various states where we see different levels of culpability. It creates consistency for military members and protection of children. Barring any additional questions, may I briefly conclude?
Any further questions? Seeing none, please conclude.
The President can determine the mens rea for an Article 134 enumerated offense. This Court should affirm the Air Force Court's decision.
Thank you, Captain Wright. Major Merck.
Thank you, Your Honors. Nobody is arguing that there's not an interest by the military in protecting children, and that that can't be done through a statute or through an Article 134 offense of child endangerment. The children are protected if under a reckless standard. So there's no unique military need that requires that parents in uniform be subject to heightened liability or a lower mens rea standard just because they wear the uniform. Just as in Vaughan, a parent who ignores the risk or a known risk of leaving their child at home for a 47-day-old child at home for, you know, 6 hours, that would be criminalized, and that is addressed. And the idea that there's a custom that requires a lower mens rea than recklessness, that is nowhere in Vaughan. That Vaughan was looking at whether for the first time under the general article, child neglect could fall under the gambit of the general article, and the court specifically stated that it was not only relying on, or it was not relying solely on custom, but also on state law. And if you look, that analysis just goes to notice of child neglect without injury to a child falling being criminalized by the military. It didn't speak to the level of mens rea that was required. And if you look at even the statutes cited by this court in Vaughan, it's six of the 34 statutes say something to a negligence or criminal negligence standard. None of them use the term culpable negligence. Six of the states are absolutely silent as to what it is. We don't know what the actual mens rea is. And 22 of 34 of those states have either recklessness, willfulness, or knowing as the requisite mens rea. So at the time, if you look at the mens rea that was out there, and that's the appropriate benchmark is at the time what was the court looking at, what was the custom at the time, it would have been, with the states, it would have been a recklessness or higher standard at least.
So are you basing that strictly on raw numbers? You indicated that some states had simple negligence. So you're in terms of custom, you're saying if, let's say, for the sake of argument, the 50 states that have ruled, if it's 24-26, custom only gets the thumbs up if the 26 states say X and not if the 24 states say Y.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. No.
So why can't we look at the fact that a number of states have said simple negligence is sufficient to indicate that this was not beyond the realm of the reasonable on the part of the executive?
Your Honor, it would be whether there's a military custom and whether the idea that looking at the states and that combined.
You were the one who bringing up the states.
Oh, but that's just to show that there is no military custom. There was no military custom for a negligent mens rea. Even the family advocacy program, if you look at what that was just, it was subject to investigation. There's no standard for actual criminalizing the behavior. It was just tracking that behavior, and you're on notice that you could be subject to investigation. And I see my time is about to expire, Your Honor. May I briefly conclude?
Let me just ask my colleagues if they have any questions. Judge Johnson, you look like
no,
you
No, I'll
might.
Let him. No, he can conclude.
Are you sure, Your Honor?
Yes, I'm positive.
Conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. Recklessness is the proper mens rea for the Article 134 offense of child endangerment. Therefore, the military judge erred when she instructed the appellant on a different mens rea, and that error constitutes a substantial basis in the law to question the province of appellant's plea to charge two specifications 6, 7, and 8. We ask that this court set aside and dismiss those specifications. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Major Merck. Case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until further order of the court.
Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.